Yes, 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 yes. We're coming live to you from Coachella. This is Insight on a Progressive Radio Network. My name is Mark Farrell. Well, maybe that's wishful thinking. Live from Coachella. Yeah, well, maybe that's not a band warming up behind me. No, unfortunately it's not. I wish I were there. Are you a Coachella fan? I would love to be there. Well, my wife and I were almost going, except we had two little issues. Kids. Anyway, we got a great show coming your way. We're going to meet a person. She's a friend of the show. She's going to tell us about some incredible advances, especially something that's happening started on April 13th at New York's Cooper Hewitt Smithsonian Design Museum. They unveiled its multi-sensory exhibition, The Senses Design Beyond Vision. It's so way cool. Unbelievable cool. We're going to meet a gentleman, owner of a small business that's really reflective of what's going on in many states across the country and may impact many services that you are receiving and or may not receive due to a lot of holdup by Congress, by bills that have been passed that are caught in the system. It's a logjam. Talking landscapers, construction, devices, mechanics, you name it. That may be impacting you. But first, I want to talk about something really, really kind of cool. So I'm not a huge fan of American Idol. Just kind of burnt on it. I love the concept, obviously, when it was original. Obviously, it's copied, it's mirrored, it's syndicated, blah, blah, blah. You know what I'm talking about. But the other day, I was watching it, and I just got, I guess, my love back for it. And the reason why is because of Ada Fox. My love for drag queens. Now, I don't have an affinity for drag queens, but Ada Fox, a.k.a., is known as Adam Sanders, not Adam Sandler. But then again, he could probably use the exposure nowadays, Adam Sandler. Anyway, I digress. So Ada Fox tried out, I think in season 12, she made it to Hollywood, which was you get your golden ticket and you go and you have fun. That's great stuff. And then she got canned for whatever reason. But she wasn't going to let go of her dream. And I talk a lot about that on the program here in terms of your value, who you are, your self-worth, what you're doing, what your goal is in life. Don't let go of that. And sure, it's a primetime show on Sunday nights and Monday nights from 8 until 10. So 4 hours for America to go gulp at a drag queen. So, you know, before the Trump Nation happened, I guess I probably wouldn't have pontificated it this much. But knowing that there's so much hate in this world, in this country, against political parties, against people with different color skin, immigration status, and God forbid you put a dress on and you're a guy, I don't do it. But, you know, I don't hate somebody. I don't spew venom for somebody who does. Ada Fox, okay, two things. If Ada Fox was truly Ada Fox, a female, I think hands down, she would win. She is phenomenal. She is truly gifted. Every time I've seen her, because I went on YouTube and watched all the previous performances, she can just blow the roof off the place. And you know, every time she comes up on stage, it seems like people are kind of like, I don't know, still a little uncomfortable and like they have to be won over for the first few seconds every time. But that's it. And then she just takes over. Ada Fox just nails it. And sadly, after her season 12 performance, where she did well, but I guess not enough, maybe the network wasn't ready. Maybe they thought America wasn't ready. Maybe they didn't like her eyeshadow. I don't know. Maybe they didn't like her dress. But guess what she received? Ada Fox / Adam Sanders received multiple, you guess it, death threats. So imagine dealing with that. Imagine just following your dream and passion in life and getting death threats because it's not the conventional way to pursue your dream. Well, neither is American Idol because the chances of you actually getting on there, the final 12, narrowed down, etc. I mean, you know, there's some really, really talented people from what I surmised on Sunday and Monday. And Ada Fox is really one of them. So I just want to say that, you know, if you're one of these people, and I don't think you are because you listen to Gary Knowles Network, Progressive Radio Network, you listen to this show, Insight, Well, hopefully I pay you pretty well to listen. But that's aside from the point. The fact is that you have an open mind. And if you didn't have, if you don't have an open mind, imagine having a son or daughter who became, you know, a transsexual. They wanted to dress in a different way. Transgender. Transsexual. I always get them confused. Transsexual. Correct? They just dress differently. No. Yes. Yes? Okay. Everyone's confused. Okay. Google. I'm sorry. Alexa, define transsexual. So my son, I don't know why somebody gave him one of these Alexa things, and I just plugged it in about 5 days ago, and it's been thrown out onto the deck about 5 times. Thank God it hasn't been freezing and raining outside, because I just get tired of hearing, Alexa, tell my dad he's being mean. Alexa, tell my dad to give me ice cream. Alexa's getting some peculiar request. Anyway, so Adam, Ada Fox, if you have a son, if you have a daughter, imagine if they decided to cross-dress. Okay, it wouldn't be the end of the world. Would their life become more complicated? Absolutely. We don't want that. And on the heels of that, I want to touch upon Mariah Carey. 21 years she's been living, 17 years she's been living with bipolar disorder number 2. And I applaud her for coming out and admitting that she's had struggles. She's been embarrassed. She has just lived in secrecy because she felt that her career, her trajectory, I don't know how much of a trajectory she has now, would be in peril. But just to be afraid of living with stigma is horrifying. And I spoke about this last week to a bunch of kids, I don't know, 500 or 800 kids on mental health down in New Jersey. It was a combination of maybe 8 to 15 high schools that kids came and spoke about mental health. And I spoke about how, actually, I did something new. I did a new opener where I came up on stage and pretended almost like my arm was injured. I kept rubbing my arm and saying that, you know, I've been living this way for a while. It's very uncomfortable. The pain is not only mental, it's physical. Actually, I said physical and mental. It's becoming harder to hide, et cetera. So I was misleading people purposefully to make them think I have a physical pain. The end result was I wanted to articulate to the audience that if you had a broken leg, if you have a sprained ankle, if you have diabetes symptoms, you go to the doctor. If I had a sprained elbow or broken arm, you go to the doctor. If your tooth is killing you, you go to the doctor. Or your parents pull it out because, you know, Obamacare has its pitfalls, but we're working on it. So that's what I wanted to get to, the fact that it is a stigma. It's become much less of a stigma. As a matter of fact, the National Center for Mental Health down in D.C. has said 2.85% of the population has bipolar disorder number 2. Bipolar disorder number 2 means the lows are not as low as bipolar disorder number 1. You never really hear it referred to as number 1 or number 2, but there are two different distinctions. So I applaud her for doing that. And going back to my story that I said to kids, that for years I only told my family, just my immediate family, that I was going through panic attacks, depression, and anxiety. And then one day during an interview on the air, it just kind of came out. Not the whole story, just the fact that, you know, I have experience in that area, etc. And then I was wearing a jacket on stage. Take off my jacket, and now I said to the audience, I looked at them, and now I wear it on my sleeve. I thought this was pretty cool. So on my left arm, all the way up, in big, bold letters with a Sharpie, read the word depression. And on my right arm said anxiety. And so the place kind of went nuts. It's kind of cool. And everyone's like, are those tattoos? I'm like, I hope not, because if I paid somebody to put that atrocious writing on there, they would have better have sued, because it was pretty awful the way I wrote it, especially because I'm righty when I'm doing lefty on my right arm. Anyway, so the point is, I know how it is to live in secrecy. And one of the questions that I was asked by a very astute 17, 18-year-old, she said, are you ever concerned about what people think about you or say about you because you're a man with mental illness? I said, wow. Ding, ding, ding. Question of the day. And I said, that's one of the reasons why I do what I do. Because years ago, when it was a little bit more taboo, the stigma was higher and more, I should say, more palpable. Men were certainly perceived as weak, not as strong. What's wrong with you? You know, you can get through this. Why do you need help? Why do you go to a doctor? Just pull yourself up by the bootstraps, dust yourself off. Yeah, you can get through this, but it doesn't matter. Mental health does not segregate. They don't care. It doesn't care if you're a male or a female. Latino, Hispanic, Black, Caucasian, Chinese, Japanese, Indian, you name it. It doesn't matter. It strikes everyone. Can strike everyone, I should say, or anyone. So it was a great question, and I want to go back to Mariah by saying that, you know, that makes sense because, you know, some of her public appearances, remember when she was on TRL years ago? She kind of had a little bit of a, I don't know, say-off appearance. That makes sense. And she had a few appearances where she's been off. And I'm sure due to her medication, maybe that's why she gained weight, et cetera. But a lot of things come into play now. And it was no mystery to me that this was revealed in People magazine. And it's great when I see this and hear this because it's one step closer for people understanding how ubiquitous this is and how if you experience some form of mental illness, it's all right, man. It doesn't mean you're a freak, you're a leper. It means just you have one other thing to deal with in life. So congratulations to Mariah Carey for acting and bringing this out, acting on her impulses. And it was hard for living with it for a long, long time. Now she can just get back to working on her singing. Well, you know she doesn't sing in any of her shows when she's in Vegas. I don't know how many years she has left on her contract. But basically, she just kind of lit. But she's gotten back into shape. Have you seen her? She looks good. I've seen some workout videos. Now it sounds weird that I'm talking about her workout videos. Well, when you do research and you put someone's name in, everything in the world pops up. But she does have a good-looking set of abs now, I'll tell you. She's back like looking when she was 27, 28. Anyway, all right. So Mark Farrell's my name. The show is Insight. The network is Progressive Radio Network. Proud to happy and happy to reintroduce a good friend of the show. Michelle Spitz and I met several years ago, and we've come very close. We've come very close because she and I are very much aligned. She likes to open doors for people with disabilities. And Michelle Spitz, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Ah, it's good to hear you. And better even yet to hear that voice of yours. And Michelle's doing something very special. She is one of the persons responsible for making what happened on April 13th and what it's going to be happening for weeks at New York's Cooper Hewitt Smithsonian Design Museum, which they unveiled its multisensory exhibition, The Senses Design Beyond Vision. This is something very, very important to you, so much so that you funded this. And you also donated your services. So the funding is obviously exorbitant. And your services as a top voiceover professional are also exorbitant. So job well done.
Thank you. And actually, the exhibit will run for 6 months. It will go through October. So it's there a wonderful amount of time. And it's really delicious and fun and embracing of all the senses. But my contribution was to make the exhibit accessible to the visually impaired. So I voiced all the content that will be accessible on a phone app for every single item in the exhibit. And I narrated all the multimedia, the movies, the videos in the exhibit as well. So my funding was designated towards complete accessibility for the visually impaired. It's a unique way they've approached it. They've never done this at the Cooper Hewitt before. So this is new for them. So it's revolutionary that it'll also set an example, not only for them going forward, but also for other museums that may have not embraced this at this juncture. And so it brings a lot more richness. And given it's the senses, now we're embracing all the senses. There's Braille labels. There's the phone app. There are sound sticks that you use to hear my voice narrating, the visuals, which I do. And it brings a different layer and texture to every visual.
The sound sticks, does that work on the frequencies?
The sound stick, I'm not quite sure what it is exactly. It's attached to the unit either under a desk or it's against a wall, and it translates the audio description through the sound stick in addition to the multimedia sounds, the inherent sounds to the media, the music.
Fascinating.
What have you.
Wow. And we're going to get a sample of this right now. This is one of the things that Michelle Spitz, known as Woman of Her Word, and she truly is. Mm. This is one of the pieces of her work, and this is what it's like for someone to be deaf.
Blind.
I'm sorry.
He's wearing dark clothes and a light gray overcoat. His hair is in a top knot. He stands in the center of the room. He claps. He claps again, now in an attic. Now in a church nave. The furniture from the bedroom travels with him. He raises his arms and sings. In a tunnel. In a locker room. In an industrial site. In a church nave.
This give me a good delay.
In a bunker. In a vaulted courtyard.
This give me a fast reverse.
In an empty swimming pool.
To make my last words longer.
In a gymnasium.
I wanna leave alone.
In an attic.
In none.
In a tunnel. Rapid scene changes.
No reverb. Well, still is it, so I don't lose infinity.
Anechoic chamber.
If death is not just a gossip.
In a gymnasium. Rapid scene changes. Seven images of the young man suddenly appear in the church nave. He looks around and sees the multiple images of himself and grins momentarily.
Love is
snap.
Like
rapid scene changes. Three figures of the young man appear in different locations.
I will never forget that I'm alone.
Figures of him in a parking garage. Now, the young man is alone, arms raised. He lowers his arms and he drops into a martial arts crouch. Joaquin Moilner is the Wicca Singer, directed by Vincent Rufiak. Produced by Touche in association with Courtenay, LGDS, Earcom Center Pompidou, and Studios DeVoot.
That is just phenomenal. Wow. I'm sorry. I thought we were playing a different clip first. That's why I set it up
That's
differently.
Okay. That's what I thought.
Phenomenal. incredible. And I want to just do something for our listeners. Alex, we're going to play that same clip back just for about 15 seconds, okay? Now, listeners, I want you to close your eyes. If you need to turn the lights off, wherever you are, if you're driving, obviously don't do this. but if you can, close your eyes and now listen to this for about 15 seconds.
A small formal bedroom. A young man enters. He's wearing dark clothes and a light gray overcoat. His hair is in a top knot. He stands in the center of the room. He claps. He claps again, now in an attic. Now in a church nave. The furniture from the bedroom travels with him. He raises his arms and sings. In a tunnel. In a locker room.
Wow, what a different experience.
Yeah.
So imagine being visually impaired or blind. Well, I can play that role because when I go to museums, it's one of the reasons why I don't go to museums too often because I cannot read the descriptions.
That's right.
But now people can experience this and you don't even have to be blind or visually impaired.
No, and actually in your case, so for example, by the way, that plays in the theater. There's a handful of videos. These are pieces of artwork. Each of they're digital artwork. So this is in the movie theater and you can sit there. What we did initially is we designed it so we would play the video without description as an art piece, and then we would introduce the title card of exactly what it is and who it was that did it, and then the next version of it would be with audio description. We've played it twice. So it's really for everybody. But in the cases of the multimedia that's sitting around the exhibit in, on different desks and different exhibits, and you're picking up the sound stick, you're going to have a similar experience with the tablets because the tablets have the other videos, one of which you were probably thinking you were playing, which was the one for the deaf regarding
Correct,
how
which we'll
deaf
get to.
Yeah, experience music as a vibration near their heart.
Frequencies.
Yeah, frequencies. So And in your case, by the way, and others, the idea of what they did, which is really quite interesting. So when you go to the museum and you have the placards, so to speak, that are positioned in places we often can't get to, there are a number of people standing in front. And for a visually impaired person, even in different than someone who has no vision, can barely get to it, let alone someone who has their vision.
Too low, too dark, too far away.
Too many people. You don't have your glasses on, myself being one of them. I can't be bothered. And so I just take in the experience as I can. But now on the smartphone or your Android, you download it on the web, you can literally you can type in the number and everything that's on that placard I have voiced. So you don't have to struggle anymore. It's identical to what is there. So a person can either just listen to it, has their vision or low vision. Also, the playback can be just with you can just read it on your phone, or you can have the playback where it's text to voice, which is not me. That's your standard text to voice. So
we're
you have all those
that.
Options. Yeah,
you're working on that. It'll be you soon. By the next time you come back. Well, think about the timeliness of this. Obviously, we couldn't do this without the technology in existence. But the fact is that it's not like you have to train people or coax them. This is what they're accustomed to, mm-hmm. holding things in their hand, having things like I was kidding before about Alexa. But I mean, this is the world that we live in, being told. But this is vital information. This is creativity. This is art. This is history. This is the world we live in. And I think, right, let me ask you, Michelle mm-hmm. Spitz, woman of her word, when do you think this is going to be found in pretty much all museums that can afford it?
That's a good question. Right now, I'm going to rewind that for a minute because what's happening, and I give great credit to this as well, this museum and others also are having guided docent tours for the visually impaired. So they take them around, they do touch tours, and they explain things, and you can have a question and answer period.
A nice exchange.
Yes, and that's quite lovely, by the way. Then there
and that
are,
shouldn't disappear.
No, it should never disappear. And then, but in addition to that, it's ideal to have the flexibility to go to every piece at your time frame and leisure. And maybe you want to skip four things and go to number five, okay? Or you want to spend a lot of time with one item. There are many museums who have separate audio description channels, for example, Antenna International. I'm trying to remember the other name of the other. It'll Acoustic Guide. They actually they have pre-recorded audio description separate tours. This is more designed towards all-in-one. And so I think in time it will be more standard. In Europe, it's quite standard. There are a lot of your museums here that have variations of this already.
And the movie theaters in Europe are much more advanced in terms of audio descriptions.
The movie theaters are a separate conversation. And for example, today I just pulled up an article about GallaPro. GallaPro is the new technology out of Israel that's being used in 12 of your Schubert theaters here, which have captioning, audio description, dubbing for people that are having issues with another language and they're trying to experience the performing arts. So there you go. It's going to be on your smartphone. It's no different than what we're doing in the museum. So my answer to you is actually across the board. You're going to see it with ActiveView in movie theaters. They have an app now also. It's not standardized yet, but it's there. I think the future will be an app that you have the flexibility, instead of having to worry where headsets are or sound sticks, where you'll be able to experience the arts at large, the cultural performing arts, operas, ballets, that will be pre-recorded at your leisure.
It's going to be interesting also. I just was giving this a thought when you were articulating about where we're going to be headed, that maybe in 10 years, when anyone goes into a movie theater, with a disability or not. I mean, I say we all have a disability mm-hmm. of some level, whether it's real or perceived. We could have our smartphones. You tune into the Wi-Fi there at the theater mm-hmm. because a lot of theaters don't have this because it is a slight expense. And I'm going to ask you another follow-up question to this in a second. But you can actually go in there. Obviously, the screens may bother people and may be able to take over your phone and control the brightness, mm-hmm. et cetera. But it may get to that point where it's so mainstream. Mm-hmm. And on another note, very quickly, because I don't want to deviate from our topic right now, but there was something that you were involved in not that long ago where you did the audio description for a film. Mm-hmm. It was debuting at Theater X, I think,
That's
on the
right.
West Coast. And unfortunately, they didn't have the budget for ear sets or whatever technology was involved,
right.
and you also supplied that as well.
Well, ActiveView, I'm not able to supply that. ActiveView is one of they're an app. They're an interesting sort of similar to GallaPro for right now, mostly movie theaters. So some of my work has been through that. For example, the movie Dealt about the blind card magician. So they were able to use that in that particular case. It was a Roxy Theater in San Francisco, who now since then has become equipped with the equipment necessary.
Outstanding.
Yeah, and there's a mandate pending in July of this year from the FCC, the Department of Justice, which will, should we say, inspire and request that more movie theaters are accessible, as will be for the visually impaired, for captioning, as well as technology stepping up. We're all being asked to step up and be accessible to all of these communities in technology and in the arts. So it's a much bigger conversation, and it will be more mainstream over time.
Well, it's a great narrative that's long overdue.
Yeah,
certainly in the last 10 years with the advancement of technology. Michelle Spitz, woman of her word, she's my guest this morning. Tell me about voicing this work and having the script in front of you. Mm-hmm. And we all have this. I have paper, and this is quite a different setting. This is live talk radio, internet radio. You're in a setting. It's in a cold, air-conditioned room. It's usually dark, or depending on how bright or dark you want it. But then you have to put yourself in that. You're an actress. And then when however much time elapses, and then you walk into the Cooper Hewitt Museum, and then you experience it. Tell me about that.
It was really cool, by the way. In fact, I'm heading back over there today because I haven't experienced the app yet.
If I can't get enough of you, you probably can't get enough of you. So tell me about when you walked in and your initial experience
and
what
my
you
goodness.
Thought it was going to be like and what it was really like.
Mm-hmm.
Today would be good because I know you have a...
I have a combination of emotions. One is I typically, for example, and I'm going to also backtrack for just a minute. To do this project took me 15 hours in a studio over a period of a week. Which
food and water were included?
Very little. Okay. And I was in a sound booth. So it was an extremely exhausting project for me, one of which I have never taken on this much in any one particular project, nor have I donated this much of my services and technology and editing and what have you to make it happen. Typically, I'm doing feature films and documentaries and things like that.
Which is also fantastic.
Which I love to do. And I'm more acclimated to that. So this was a very new challenge and endeavor for me to take abstract art and audio describe it and give it voice and give it texture. So when I was in the studio recording some of this, I would be listening, for example, as you were playing the Wicca Singer. And I would find myself in a groove trying to mesh with this content, which was so foreign to me compared to films. It was just too abstract. But it worked. And when I finally got into the theater and exhibit, I just sort of sat there and I thought, oh my God, this finally happened. And wow, this sounds amazing. You know, it just, you just don't know. And then the remainder of it, I would go to the sound sticks, I would pick it up, I'd listen to my voice, I'd meet some of the designers that made some of these exhibits, and I'd say, I'm the voice of this exhibit.
Everything's coming to fruition.
Yeah, and
minds
I haven't heard,
and voices behind it.
Yeah, and I haven't heard the app today. I'll probably hear the app. What I typically do is I wait until my film, it comes out or it's at a festival. And in this case, it was no different. In fact, the curator said, would you like to hear any of this? And I said, no. Beforehand, I said, I think it's like my films. I'm going to wait till I get there. It's my present to myself.
Good for you.
Yeah.
It's interesting, and I'd like you to follow up with me about this, is your take on it today. If it's not today or whenever you go back. Because, you know, when we watch a movie for the first time, when you have nothing to do with it, it has an impression on us, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. And so sometimes, depends on where we are in life, has a different experience. So it's going to be interesting to see if maybe the excitement of everything that you've done to get to this level, your passion, your philanthropy, everything, your connections in the world, making a foothold for yourself, making a name, woman of your word, you name it, all these things coming together, all these worlds colliding in a great way to see how it sounds now.
Yeah, I think so. And I'm almost 5 years into this work. And to
You've done a lot in 5 years.
I've done a lot. I've done 50 films.
And this is all on your website, correct?
It is.
WomanOfHerWord.com. WomanOfHerWord.com. And let's go to this other clip that we were talking about before. This is what it's like to be deaf.
To listen to music.
One man plays a guitar and another plays a violin. A hand rests on the body of the guitar and then touches the violin. The hand opens, revealing a small round device. A handsome young man in a white t-shirt drapes a string around his neck and connects a round device to each end of the string. One device sits on his collarbone, the other sits above his heart. He walks outside with his eyes closed, swaying and grooving. He crosses an open square and then joins a young woman wearing a yellow summer dress. Sitting down, he takes off one of the round devices. He attaches it to a small clip and gives it to the woman. She clips it to her top, letting the device rest against her chest. They sit side by side in the afternoon sun. Vibeat.
Well done.
I love that.
It makes me think of two things. Number one, how sonically incredible that is.
Yeah.
Which is incredible for the people who are not hearing impaired. And for people who obviously have cochlear implants and can hear, but also I imagine it helps with the translation for Vibeat, because the stronger the frequency, the more powerful the message would be in the, I don't know what we'll call them, transponders, for lack of a better word. And of course, the marriage of your voice and the text with the stunning visuals.
I really love this piece. This actually is one of my favorites because it also it touches my heart based on the work that I do. So these particular items are at the exhibit. This is what part of the exhibit's about. And you see how these pieces are exhibited on a table and the variation of them. So what's interesting is somebody had mentioned when they watched this, oh, my God, this should be on their website. I said, but this is for the deaf, not for the visually impaired. He said, but there's something that you bring to it in texture that makes it so incredible. And in a way, he's right. That's actually quite true.
It comes to life.
It comes to life.
Absolutely.
But imagine those extraordinary pieces. And this is one of many, many. I think there's 90 pieces or 85 pieces in the exhibit. This is one of many other extraordinary things.
60-some-odd pieces, I believe.
I think it's actually total. I think it's like 80-something.
Wow.
I don't know. I've lost track. There were too many.
Sensory overload.
But I'll tell you, for example.
There's going to be a decompression room.
I want to mention just a couple quick things.
Please do.
I think it's really interesting. Those of you who have not been to the exhibit or might like to go to the exhibit, it's a really fabulous experience. There are really some amazing things. You walk in. There is a fur wall. And you rub your hands.
Oh, it's just like my bedroom. Did I say that out loud?
Mark. Of course, Mark. And you.
When I was single, of course.
Row. Here we go. You rub your hands against this fur wall. It's a very large wall, and it's symphonic. You create a symphony with your hands.
Wow.
Yeah. Then on the opposite side of that, as you walk in,
drug free.
Then on the opposite side, there are these sort of, I want to say, plasticized, acrylic ish pillars, and they have lights within them, and on the top are words of some sort of emotion, a state of emotion. On the back, those words are in Braille, and on the right-hand side, you push the button, and a scent comes out that's associated with that kind of an emotion. So you bend down, and actually, they're very accurate. Some are more delightful. Some are a little bit disturbing.
New York City-like.
And then
Ninth Avenue subway line.
That's lovely. And then another one, which I think, to be honest with you, when I've watched people go through the exhibit, where most of them are migrating, is to these chairs that are against the back wall, where you sit down, you put the headset on, and you look on the floor, and there are words that are reflected on the floor of a certain situation. Let's say you're in a room with a washing machine and blah, blah, blah. There's all kinds of things going on, and kind of peculiar things, actually. And the headset brings all the sensibility to you, and the chair actually has the same vibration.
It's almost like a cacophony of noises.
And sensations. Yes. So the entire exhibit, aside from my narration, quite frankly, it's sensory overload. It's over the top. Tactile maps you touch, it tells you where you are. It's amazing.
Cooper Hewitt Smithsonian exhibit. It's when? Until the end of?
October 28th.
October 6 months. People, wherever you are listening to this, come to New York City. Check this out. It's incredible. And very quickly, Michelle Spitz, tell me how and what drew you into this world to help persons with disabilities.
I've always had an interest in people being socialized and having cultural experiences together and being embraced in all the arts. And it started with seniors. Then it started with other different individuals that had disabilities. And ultimately, I was asked to narrate a movie for the blind. I didn't know what that was at the time. And all of a sudden, my world changed and shifted dramatically.
So your world went from real estate to a passion that you've had for
real
quite
estate
some
marketing.
Time. Real
I'm
estate
not
marketing.
An agent.
I can't see you with a card with your picture on it by any means. If it were that way, it had to have an audio description, visuals, tactile.
Oh, that's hysterical,
experience.
By the way. No, the end. Really, the beauty of that was not only was I underwriting with my philanthropy, the ability for all these people to embrace the arts, be on the stage, behind the stage, on the camera, behind the camera, anything that helped people ground themselves and be part of the arts, then I was able to make an art form accessible by virtue of narrating for the blind. And who would have ever imagined such an incredible thing happened? And that's the story right there.
And very quickly, I would be remiss in not mentioning the fact that you give away some grants. Very quickly, if you can tell me the organization, I think it's called BAFTA.
BAFTA, I have a scholarship I created for Feirstein Graduate Program for Film School. For students with disabilities.
Outstanding.
Yep.
Second or third year in a row?
It's my third year. I have two different students. And I've supported the Helen Keller Center. I've taken students out to School of Rock. You've interviewed them.
Been on a show right here.
Yep.
Fantastic
Actors
people.
For Autism,
yes.
Lighthouse for the Blind, Guide Dogs for the Blind, and narrate their newsletters every quarter for 4 years, 5 years almost. Whatever I feel, senior programs where they go to the arts and socialize, I whatever it is that brings people joy outside of their everyday lives is what I want to support.
And lastly, I'm going to put you on a spot. If you can give an audio description starting right now, no rehearsal of what I'm doing.
Mark is picking up his glasses, turning his head, and putting his dark glasses on his face.
Very well done. You passed the audition. WomanOfHerWord.com. WomanOfHerWord.com, correct?
That's correct.
The suffix.com. Thank you so much, Michelle Spitz.
Thank you for having me.
For your heartfelt work, your philanthropy that really opens doors, and more importantly, for the work that you've done that has really knocked down barriers. I mean, look at in 6 months' time, how many people will go to the Cooper Hewitt Smithsonian Museum and experience this?
I look forward
Maybe
to
tens
hearing.
Of thousands of people. The write-up, the reviews have been phenomenal, and I can't see why news organizations and maybe specials and documentaries wouldn't be made about this, because even just the conceptual alone is phenomenal. And then how the art worlds meld, the voiceover, the visuals,
the touch,
the trailer alone is just phenomenal. These are really high quality productions.
They are.
It's not something that you're going to see on YouTube that was put together by an 18-year-old, which, by the way, the 18-year-olds are doing pretty damn good. Nothing. This is just stellar, professional, grade A material. And keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much.
Michelle Spitz, all the best to you. My name is Mark Farrell. Thanks for hanging in there. Are you still there? Oh, you are still there. Good, good, good. We have another part of the show that I'm very excited to bring to you. If you have a small business, you would be particularly interested in hearing this. If you have a service, landscaping service, maybe a construction service, a carpenter, something in your life, there could be a change in your near future. And I have a guest that I'm introducing to the show that his pseudonym today is going to be John Deere, because unfortunately, in this world that we live in, we have people who, as I mentioned in the beginning of the show, when we're talking about immigrants and hate and Ada Fox on American Idol as a drag queen getting death threats, etc., we have people who are not as understanding and open-minded as you are as a Progressive Radio Network listener. So, Mark Farrell, happy to introduce John Deere. John, how are you?
I'm great. How you doing?
All right. So you're going through a struggle as a businessman, and it's something that seems going to be more ubiquitous in the next few months. As a businessman, as a million-dollar in the world of budgets and gross profits, et cetera, landscape contractor, you are down from seven members, a crew member, down to two. Explain that quickly, if you can, in a nutshell.
Yes, we utilize what's called the H-2B program, which is a foreign – we bring foreign workers here on a visa, which we petition for, and which we will – you know, which we have to go through different steps on and everything, where it be Department of Labor and fees, and then USCIS and fees, and being accepted by USCIS and everything. And we will – and – that is our has been our backbone of what we have been utilizing now for over at least 10 years now, which has allowed our company to grow and prosper and really, you know, give back to the country also.
Absolutely, in many different forms. And a businessman from a proprietor since 1987, going towards the visa aspect of what you just mentioned, 66,000 for the year were given out, or 33 in the first quarter, first half of the year, and 33 in the second half. And there was a very, very important bill, the omnibus bill that was passed just weeks ago. And that thing was loaded, chock loaded with border security, opioids, and of course, leading to this topic that we're talking about right now. But apparently there's a log jam.
Yes, yes, absolutely. So this year, for the second half of the year, they took in, there's only supposed to be 33,000 visas. So in turn, they took in 47,000 applications, and they actually, or for 47,000 workers, excuse me, and they actually, instead of a first-come, first-served basis, they went to a lottery, okay? So a lot of the lottery system, which obviously failed me because I have no workers now. And in turn, my company is suffering now from lack of labor and not being able to fill my needs.
As a landscape,
all these years.
Sure, as a landscape contractor, mid-April, you're working 7 days a week, typically, I should say.
Absolutely.
And with a crew of three, you included, this is something that's harrowing. I'm sure that as a proprietor that has 50% of your business is commercial, 50% of your business is residential, that comes down to a lot of dollars.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a lot of tax dollars of all the paychecks that everybody, you know, when an H-2B worker comes here, he pays the same taxes as every red-blooded American pays, Social Security, disability, state and federal taxes. So all this on top of all of the, as far as rental property, which they would live in, which
sure.
is not being utilized now, all the needs that give back to the community, buying food,
cars, clothing,
gas. Clothing, everything across the board, which is all pluses for our community and everything, plus all the processing fees that we pay and that go back to the to all of us. It's just a win-win situation for us that's being ignored by the government.
In your due diligence in trying to expedite all these H-2Bs and getting everybody legitimized so you can have this large crew that you need, you've contacted New Jersey Representative Chris Smith, of course, Cory Booker, Senator Cory Booker, and Bob Menendez. Any luck with any of those three?
There has been nothing right now. They tell me that they are DHS, Homeland Security, mm-hmm. is looking into it. They're studying it. They're, you know, they want to make sure that it's not taking American jobs. And it's a well-known fact that H-2B visas do not affect American jobs.
There's a study that goes into it, correct?
Them. Yes, absolutely. And they create American jobs because these guys are doing the labor end of it. So it creates a higher level job for the American worker, which is even a higher paying mm-hmm. job than what the laborers are being paid. And the notion that the laborers are being paid, let's say that there is people out there that label them as cheap labor. Well, I see my starting wage, which Department of Labor sets at $16 an hour, minimum wage of what I have to pay anybody that starts working for my company, as being more than adequate compared to the normal wage, the minimum wage in New Jersey, which people have to work for and live on. So to raise that wage, to make it an even playing field, why don't they raise it to $16 an hour for everybody? Then?
Sure. And this is a long process. You have to post for all these different jobs, which costs money, and minimum time and requirements, and I imagine the platforms vary. You have to interview. You have to prove that you've done your due diligence to prove that there's not enough other help, local help, to document warranting getting these individuals as potential employees. So it's not something that's an easy task. It's not that daunting. But I mean, a lot of people can take the shortcut as a landscaper. We've seen this before, or a construction company, whatever the case may be, and just hire people and pay them cash and go around, circumnavigate everything. And that good. And who does that benefit?
As far as for us, can you repeat the question again?
I was making a point that you're trying to do everything the legal and legitimate way. And it makes it very, very confusing and difficult and arduous versus somebody who owns a landscaping company, construction company, or a company X who says, you know what, I'm not even going to bother going the legitimate way. I'm just going to hire day workers, pay them cash, and circumvent the whole process.
Yes, which a lot of people now are thriving on that because there's the visa program, the H-2B visa program has been cut back and it's been held very stringent to the 66,000 visas, and which is very inappropriate. And in turn, I have no workers because I'm trying to do it legally. And those people out there doing it illegally are the ones that are picking up my customers now because I'm turning back the hands of time for my company by having to give away my contracts, my work that I can't perform because I have no workers.
So best case scenario, how do you see this being resolved?
I think bringing back the returning worker exemption is one way that would help give a lot of cap relief for a lot of companies. And until they can come up with their own idea of fixing this, we need help. I mean, we're American companies that are failing, and they're helping the illegal immigrants thrive right now. I mean, there's obviously a labor shortage. There's not enough Americans that want to do this kind of work. They don't take it seriously. They don't take it because to them it's a seasonal job. Oh, I'm going to be a landscaper. Oh, I'm going to work for an irrigation company or whatever because I'm going to be something else. You know, this is just a stepping stone in my path. It's not really taken seriously.
Something I love to do in between summers in college, I think it builds character, and I loved being outdoors. But that's just me. There's obviously a different generation at stake right now. But you mentioned just something a moment ago that was interesting, returning workers. So that means a worker that's worked for you in the past would be exempt from this program.
Yes, it would be exempt from the cap of the 66,000. Absolutely, absolutely. So anyhow, I mean, I don't want to change the subject, but going to this year, they had the lottery for the second half for the 33,000. So there was a lot of companies that did not get that. So in the omnibus bill, there was legislation that actually added another 67,000 visas. Okay, but it was left to the discretion of Homeland Security to release these visas. And to this day, since the omnibus bill was passed, which was quite a few weeks ago, there's not even a press release to the fact of what they are doing to help us as Americans to relieve the stress of this and the failing companies. I mean, there's companies that are going out of business, companies that are downsizing. I can't see how this is good for Americans at all.
Would it be good for Donald Trump?
It's wonderful for Donald Trump because Donald Trump utilizes his visas in the first half of the cap year, and he has all of his visas. Last year, he increased the cap visas in the second half because he needed additional workers, and he got his additional workers, and he had them released right away. So if...
Please go ahead, continue.
No, so from what is said, he supports the program, but yet he is yet to help us or to compel his Homeland Security Secretary to step up and say, we're there with you, Americans, and we understand your pain, and we're going to release your visas.
Now, it's certainly time is of essence right now, but if you had more time, this seems like a class action suit would be warranted against the Department of Homeland Security to get them to move along the process.
Yes, yes, but, you know.
That's a big ball of wax, and of course you'd have to get a lot of people together.
That's a big ball of wax.
Yeah, exactly. But in terms of, unfortunately, sometimes that's what it takes. We have to get the press involved to get this understood, that this is becoming more epidemic. And this is for all 50 states, correct?
Excuse me?
This applies to all 50 states.
It applies to all 50 states, yes. Yes, it does. And you can bring workers from any certified country that the Homeland Security is certified to be. It could be Europe. It could be Guatemala. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're bringing Mexican workers here.
In our pre-interview, you mentioned of a Maryland senator whose name I'm not recalling right now, who inquired about a timeline about when this would be available and wasn't given one, correct?
Exactly, yes.
So we're having a senator, you know, articulate a concern about his state and obviously other states as equally as important, unified, and we're not getting anywhere. This is troublesome because the only thing is, I imagine when people's lawns won't be mowed or things, construction sites will come to a halt or a slowdown, or maybe if a boycott happens, maybe things will change. But until then, until like the logjam becomes more evident, maybe it's just going to keep being a slow process, unfortunately.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. It's going to be a slow process, but I think they're going to see the effects, especially this year, in a lot of companies that are not buying new equipment,
Good point.
No new trucks. I mean, when you're buying a truck and outfitting it for $80,000, or you're buying a new machine for $100,000,
health insurance,
even lawnmowers, health insurance,
liability.
Everything. Yep, yep. Everything
it's a trickle down effect. Certainly.
Yes, yes, and workers' compensation. I mean, that's all, you know, they contribute into that also.
So we're talking about livelihood here. Small business owner, you're not alone. You're far from alone. What are the options here to do what many companies do? And I don't have any stats here. I'm just going by what I've seen and read in papers, national papers about their towns that they have day laborers. What are options? Picking up day laborers and circumventing it until the process works?
I mean, that's not really a viable option. I mean, the viable option is to downsize our company. I mean, that's
the legal
really,
way, correct?
Yes, exactly. That's the way I've done it for years, and I always been doing it. And I'm an American, and I believe in America. But you know, as far as American workers doing this job, it's very foreign few.
And obviously, you can document the accounts you've had for years. Everything obviously are on the books. So when this is all said and done, it would be interesting to see if someone actually brought a class action, or B, just sued DHS for lost wages or lost income due to the fact that maybe it's a $10 million company that lost $5 million, obviously for two reasons, to regain their losses. And number two, to prove a point about the vital need for this program to be effective.
Yes. Yes, something to open their eyes to it. But it's, you know, I believe there's a lot of special interests involved in this. And, you know, we're not one of them, so they don't see it our way necessarily. There are those congressmen and senators out there that believe in their people in their state, and they want to support them and their state to thrive. And they want this program to if not to increase and become better than what it is, and to really help Americans thrive and everything. And through the years, Department of Labor and Homeland Security and USCIS has raised the bar on this program. They have increased the fact of what you have to pay and what you have to give the worker, and the wages have gone up. I mean, the way they keep raising the bar, almost to seem like they are trying to squash this program. And you hear representatives say that, oh, we need a guest worker program. Well, we've had this
in
guest
place.
Worker
sure.
program for well over a decade. And you know what? How about everybody gets behind this and supports this
Absolutely.
Instead of the rhetoric that keeps going on.
We're
going
to have to leave it there, unfortunately, due to time constraints. I wish you the best.
Yep.
I hope this thing turns around for your sake, for the country's sake, for every employer and proprietor out there, because obviously this is detrimental for everybody. Thank you so much for your time. The best to you. My name is Mark Farrell. If you'd like me to speak at your school, college, or corporation on anti-bullying, drugs and alcohol, mental health, celebrating differences, and more, check out markfarrellmotivation.com. My name is Mark Farrell. Have a great day. We'll be right back.